It's time for the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. Stay tuned as we discuss local and national sports from Southeast Missouri and beyond. The Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle is brought to you by Royal Retros. If you like cool throwback jerseys of defunct sports teams, Royal Retros is the place to buy. If you go to royalretros.com and you order with the code SPORTSDESK, all one word, you can get a little bit off your order. So check out Royal Retros. And now on with the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. And welcome back to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. I'm Mike Bueller.
I'm Mark Sanders.
And Kyle Roberts is out today, but we still have a very full show planned. We are going to be talking football, and more football. We are also going to talk a little bit of Raiders and Lady Raiders basketball. But we are going to start off by recapping last week's Missouri High School Football District Championships for our area teams. And we are going to start in Class 1, where the Hayti Indians got a rematch with Portageville. And a now healthy Hayti team looked really good, came out with a dominant 38-13 win. Mark, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm really not surprised. I saw Hayti in either their second or third game of the season this year, covering them for the paper. And their quarterback and their leading running back were just extraordinary. They were running up and down the field all four quarters, literally unstoppable. And then, like you said, it looked like injuries took their toll. They dropped a lot of games in the middle of the season. But since they've been healthy, their last, I believe, three games, they have just been an absolute machine. Let me take a look at this real quick.
I believe they have won four in a row.
That is correct. And so, and in fact, their only previous loss before this winning streak was a 9-point loss at Caruthersville. And since that time, you're right, they've won four in a row, including back-to-back victories in the district tournament over Saxony Lutheran and then with Portageville. So do you want to go on with recap before we talk about the state quarterfinals?
Yeah, we're going to go ahead with recaps before we go to the state quarterfinals. I'm going to skip Class 2, and I'm going to jump into Class 3 real quick, where the Dexter Bearcats got an impressive 33-12 win over Potosi. I actually thought Dexter might have some trouble with Potosi's speed and with their home run hitting running back Noah Walton, but instead the Bearcats did what they have done much of the season, jumped out to a big early lead and took it from there.
Yeah, I'm really not surprised. I've been in a position all season that Dexter is a team on a mission, and I think the fact that have a diversified backfield, that they're getting their offensive production from multiple contributors instead of just one big fullback, I think that's a real advantage for them. Their defense has improved over last season as well, so I am still very bullish on the Bearcat success.
And they have got a pretty solid matchup coming up on Saturday. We're going to talk about that one in a bit. We're going to jump up to Class 6 before we jump back to a couple of other districts. But we're going to jump up to Class 6, where the Jackson Indians absolutely destroyed Northwest 70-7 in the district finals. I mean, it was over with early in Jackson.
Yeah, that's really not the kind of game that you expect from a district final. That's like a lot of those Super Bowls from the 1990s where, you know, the game was basically over by halftime. I don't think Jackson is going to have quite as easy a time of it this Saturday, unfortunately for the Indians fans, but we are going to talk about that. Bring us up to date on what happened in Class 5.
In Class 5, the Farmington Knights hosted Cape Central in a SEMO North Conference rematch, and Farmington came out with a 21-0 win.
I'm sorry, Mike. Refresh my memory. Which team did I pick to win that game?
You picked Farmington.
And which team did you pick?
I picked Cape.
Okay. I just wanted to get that on the record. Thank you.
That was actually a very impressive win by Farmington because since Farmington had played Cape earlier, Cape had gotten standout running back Keyshawn Boyd healthy. I really thought that Boyd was going to get them over the top. I was wrong. And Farmington, you know, shut them out. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
It's very impressive. It's very impressive, especially I will give Cape Central props, much like Haytai. They overcame some mid-season injuries and finished the season really strong. But I think this is the best Farmington team that we've seen in quite some time.
I do, too. We're going to jump down to Class 2, where Caruthersville hosted St. Pius X out of Festus, a rematch of opening week, a game that Caruthersville won the first time around, but it was a different time, a different outcome the second time, as Festus St. Pius came out with a 28-14 win.
Yeah, I'm really surprised. I thought the Tigers would at least win their district. So, but still, congratulations on a good season. But we'll have to keep an eye on them next year to see if they can build on the success and move forward, or whether they will fall back. It really depends on who they lose to graduation and who they have moving up onto those varsity spots.
It's going to be interesting, and we're going to take a look at our state quarterfinal games in Class 1. The Haytai Indians are making the trip to Vandalia to take on the Vanfar Indians. Should be a good matchup. You know, Haytai is playing a lot better football since quarterback J.C. Ford got healthy. He has been a difference maker. They have been very dominant these last 4 weeks. I think he's going to be the difference maker again this weekend, and I am going to take Haytai to win that game.
You know, I think I can be 100% certain. I can give you a 100% guarantee who's going to win this game. It's going to be the Indians.
I agree. It is going to be.
No, it's going to be. I think it's going to be the Haytai Indians. Looking at the tail of the tape, Haytai sits one game back on the season record, finishing 6-5 to Vanfar's 7-4 record. They have pretty equal numbers in terms of game averages. Haytai averaging 31.6 on offense and holding opponents to 27.6, while Vanfar offense 32.9, defense 24.1. So fairly comparable numbers. I think the home field advantage in Vandalia gives Vanfar a bit of an edge, but I'm going to go with the hot hand. Haytai has really been playing well the past few weeks. I think they've got a lot of momentum, and I think they're going to take that momentum to the state semifinals.
And that leads us into two really outstanding matchups. First, we are going to hop up to Class 6, where the Jackson Indians are hosting the CBC Cadets from Christian Brothers College in St. Louis. CBC is the number one team in the state. They had a wild district final. They hosted Lafayette in a battle of undefeated teams. CBC won that game 77-62. I think their quarterback hit like 5 3-pointers. Oh, wait, that's wrong sport.
It sounds like a basketball score. That's absurd. And it's also embarrassing for both teams that neither team actually had a defense that suited up for that game. And there's just you have to be able to stop the other team, and that's why I'm giving the edge to Jackson. Their defense has been absolutely ridiculous. Out of an 11-0 record, points allowed per game 13.1. I mean, it's like I don't even know how to explain that on any level. I mean, it's like look at. Don't just look at the margin of victory. Look at the points that they've given up. 20, 10, 28, 7, 7, 24 to Cape, which was their season high, but they also scored 62, 7, 6, 21 to Festus while scoring 62. And in their last two games, they've only given up a touchdown. Now, obviously, CBC has a powerhouse offense themselves, but again, let's take a look at their record.
One thing that is interesting is both of those teams play Cardinal Ritter, and I think both of them hosted Ritter. Jackson got a very close game against Ritter, close one against Ritter in the opening of the season. Week two, Ritter went to CBC, and CBC won that game 34-12, but that was also early in the season.
Right.
This game is going to be at Jackson. It's going to be a close one, but with the home field advantage, I'm going to stick my neck out and take Jackson with the upset.
Yeah, I really don't think it's much of an upset. I mean, they're both undefeated teams. I think I would probably give the edge to CBC if they were playing at home, but it's a road game. And I think Jackson's defense is really going to make the difference here. It might be a high-scoring game. They may give up their most points of the season to the Cadets, but I think their defense is going to be enough to get enough stops to allow their offense to make the difference in this game. I think whoever wins, it's going to be by 7 or fewer points. I think it's going to be a very exciting matchup in Jackson.
It is, and that brings us to our other exciting matchup, a rematch of last year's Class 3 quarterfinals. The Dexter Bearcats are taking on the Lift for Life Academy Charter Hawks. And just like last year, that game is again going to be at Melville High School, since, if I'm correct, Lift for Life does not have a home field of its own. Lift for Life won that game really big last year. But Lift for Life, I think, has a little bit different team this year. Lift for Life lost by 1 at Cape Central earlier this season. Another team they played out of the area that I follow some is Murfreesboro, Illinois, which is over by Carbondale. Lift for Life won that game 46-34, which Murfreesboro is a good program, but they were a little bit down from what they've been the last few years and ended up 4-5. I've been going back and forth on this one. I'm again going to stick my neck out, and I'm going to take Dexter in the upset, though this one could go either way.
I've been on the Dexter bandwagon all season. I see no reason to change this up. It is in St. Louis, which is a bit of a home field advantage for the Hawks. But again, it's not a home field. It's not their home. I mean, it is at Melville High School, so it's technically a neutral site. Dexter is averaging 42.4 points per game against Lift for Life's 34.3. And again, like I said, with Jackson, I think Dexter's defense is going to be the difference here, giving up a minuscule 11.8. I mean, that's less than 4 field goals, or a touchdown in 2 field goals. And I don't even know why I say the word field goal in high school football. That's going to be an off-season rant of mine, but the dearth of place kickers at the high school level is really just amazing for me. It's kickers and punters. You know, it's like every team just goes for it on fourth down because they don't have a punter who can do literally anything. No one ever kicks a field goal. I mean, ever. They hardly ever even attempt field goals. I mean, it's just astounding that of everybody, all the kids you've got enrolled in your school, you can't find anyone who can kick a ball 30 yards. I mean, come on, man. Anyway, they're giving up 11.8 points per game, while Lift for Life is giving up just under 26 points. Now, yeah, Lift for Life ran them out of the building last season. Dexter, their goal for last season was to win the district. I mean, that was clear. You saw, I was there covering that game for the newspaper. I saw how they celebrated in the game. And that was not an easy walkover win for them. They had to really fight back in the second half to take that game. And I think that was their goal, and they met their goal. And I'm not going to say that that team wasn't prepared to play last time, but I'll tell you what, you know, when you get over that first goal, making it past that first obstacle, you know, winning the district and going on to the state quarterfinals, there is naturally, especially we have to remember that these are kids, these are children, all right, these are boys. I'm 57, so I can say that. These are boys ranging, you know, from 17 or 18 years old at the most, all the way down to 14, maybe as young as 13, or just freshmen on the team, maybe not. But let's just say 15 to 17 years old. These are kids, and, you know, they're highly emotional. You see that on the field. And, you know, once you have the high of that district victory, it's very easy just to let up and say, hey, you know, we won district. We accomplished what we had to accomplish. That's a completely different atmosphere for the Dexter team this year. They had already won district. District was not their goal this year. Their goal is to advance in state. I don't think that just getting to this level is good enough for anyone, from Coach Chad Jamerson all the way down to fourth string cornerback or whoever they have, whoever's the youngest last person on the depth chart. That entire team is looking for more. They're looking at a bigger thing. They're looking at least at a Final Four appearance, if not a state championship, and they may be able to pull it off. And so I think they're going to win this game. I don't think it's going to be necessarily easy, but I think they are going to win it by at least a 2-score margin.
It's going to be interesting. And like Jackson and I believe Haytai, this is going to be a Saturday game. We're going to switch gears real quick, and we're going to talk a little bit of Three Rivers Lady Raiders and Raiders basketball.
Oh. Are we not going to talk about Farmington? Are you going to leave my boys at Farmington out?
No, we're not.
Class 5.
That's going to be interesting. Farmington's good, but I think Kirkwood may just be a little bit better. They've played a tougher schedule. I'm going to take Kirkwood.
Yeah, again, I'm going to look at the statistics. Farmington scoring a lot of points. They're outscoring Kirkwood on the average 41-36. Farmington is giving up almost 22 points a game, while Kirkwood's defense is very stingy. 10.5 points a game. 10.5 points a game is their average. And taking a look at their season, the only team that they lost to was, that's Lafayette of Wildwood. They shut out 5-6 Rolla in the first round of the districts, and then won a low-scoring game against 8-3 Eureka to make it to this point by a score of 21-10. So, yeah, this is going to be very close. This is going to be very close. But, like I've said this before, my parents live in Farmington. I've got an aunt and uncle and a whole family full of cousins who live in Farmington. So they're playing the game at Farmington. I'm going to go with Knights. I'm probably going with my heart than my head. I think if I was just looking at the raw numbers, I would probably go with Kirkwood. But, this is not for wagering purposes. This is just two guys talking about sports. So I am going to stick with the Knights as long as they're still in it.
Indeed. Switching gears to Lady Raiders and Raiders basketball. I'm going to start with Lady Raiders. They played last Wednesday against Lincoln Trail, came away with a dominant 91-35 win. Amelia Carsonetti ended up scoring 31 points in that game. You know, very impressive effort. She has been a really amazing player for them, and they played at National Park College last night. We tape on Tuesdays, so we don't have the result from that one, but they looked very impressive against Lincoln Trail.
Hey, looking at the box score, it was, I'm going to have to do some math. Wait, you're the math whiz. Tell me the halftime score here.
53-27.
Okay, 53-27. I mean, that's an impressive lead. But they outscored Lincoln Trail in the second half. I can do this math. 38-8.
Now, that's what I call defense, y'all.
They only gave up 8 points in the second half. They only gave up 2 points in the fourth quarter. I mean, that's amazing. Congrats to the Lady Raiders defense. Man, those are the kind of results that you hardly ever see outside of high school basketball.
Indeed. We're going to switch gears and talk about the Raiders a little bit. They had a very busy week last week. Last Tuesday, which we may have had this on last week's podcast, they went down to Jones, the number 6 team in the country, lost 99-85 to a very talented Jones team. And then to wrap up a 5-game road string where they played 5 games in 19 days, traveling to as far away as southeastern Iowa and southern Mississippi. They went to Mineral Area to play in the Bob Seacrest Classic. Beat Lakeland College 97-89 last Friday night. That was a game the Raiders had a big lead in, but had to hold on at the end. And then Saturday, last game of a road swing. They lost to Wabash Valley 68-60. You know, I caught that game. It was a very frustrating game. We were very flat. But again, you know, that tends to happen when you're playing your fifth game in 9 days and you've played two of them against ranked teams. It's almost inevitable that at some point you're going to run out of gas. I think that's what happened to the Raiders. You know, I know a couple of my friends that are big fans were very discouraged after it. It's like, guys, and as I've said to them before, and I will say in general, you can't read too much into one loss, just like you can't read too much into one win.
I mean, that's absurd. They're 4-4. It's the middle of November. I mean, you know, this is like your favorite football team starting the season 2-2 and saying, well, they're never going to make the playoffs. I mean, you got it. Guys, calm down, okay? I mean, 4-4 is fine at this point. I said this last time we talked about it. Nothing counts until January, okay? Nothing. Even the record doesn't really count until January because, well, it counts a little bit if you're talking about national seeding if you make it. But you don't want to peak in early December, okay?
And exactly.
Coach Kirby knows this. He's ramping up for February and March and what lies beyond. So settle down, folks.
And that's a good point. I mean, the Raiders have played an absolutely savage schedule thus far. I mean, they have played of their four losses, Wabash is the only unranked team to beat them. Their other three opponents are either ranked or were ranked when they played. They also have a win against a Triton team that was ranked that, like the Raiders, went to Hutch last year. The Raiders are off until this Saturday when they play Southern Arkansas University Tech. And the Lady Raiders are also playing Vincennes that day, too. Lady Raiders play at 2. The men play at 4. I think this is going to be a bounce-back game for the men. I think the women are going to keep their winning ways up. It's going to be interesting. The women also played John A. Logan on Monday afternoon in the last game before Thanksgiving. They're heading down to Athens, Texas for a tournament at Trinity Valley. That's going to be a big test. Meanwhile, the Raiders are hosting East Mississippi, Northeastern Oklahoma A&M, and Wabash Valley for their own Thanksgiving tournament. So there's going to be some good basketball coming up.
Yeah, and once again, I want to throw out the invitation for anyone within a reasonable distance drive of Poplar Bluff and the beautiful Three Rivers College campus in the heart of Poplar Bluff, Missouri. Come out and join us at the Libla Family Sports Complex and support your Raiders and Lady Raiders.
Indeed, and that's good advice. It's something I love to do. It's something Mark loves to do. And on that note, we are going to take a break and come back and talk about the National Football League here on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
This is Three Rivers College women's basketball coach Alex Wiggs, and you are listening to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
And we are back on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle, and it is now time to talk about the National Football League. I'm going to lead off with my Tennessee Titans. We were so close to getting a win. I mean, we were close, but close doesn't count in the NFL. We ended up losing on a walk-off field goal to the Houston Texans. The good news is the defense looked great. The bad news is the offense struggled, as it has done most of the season. Cam Ward just does not have many pieces around him. And the one really legit target he had, Calvin Ridley, came back long enough to break his fibula and be done for the season.
Ugh,
so
that's terrible.
Basically, the Titans are once again in great shape to lose the rest of their games and get the number one pick. I'm going to talk about that real quick because that's really about the only thing worth talking about if you're the Titans, is what we can do with that top pick if we get it. I'm not even going to think about who we can take because we need more than one person. We need to trade that. I'm going to start sounding like you, Mark. We need to trade that pick. There are several NFL teams that have 2 first-round picks. The Jets have 2 first-round picks. The Rams do as well. I believe the Cleveland Browns also have a first round pick or 2 first round picks. The New York Jets also have two second-round picks. So I'm going to be honest with you. If I'm the Tennessee Titans and the Jets want to trade up and take Fernando Mendoza, I'm saying let's do that and let's get some bodies, because with the Titans, what don't we need? We need an edge rusher. We need a playmaking wide receiver. We need a left tackle. We need help in the secondary. I mean, basically, it's not really a question of what do we need. It's more a question of what don't we need. If we do keep the number one pick, I know you're looking at Reuben Bain Jr., who was Cam Ward's Miami teammate.
Yeah, he's the consensus number one pick by all of the mock drafts right now. And wow, he looks like he could definitely be a huge force on that defensive line for you guys.
Well, another thing that's also going to help the Titans is I've heard we are going to have a lot of cap room in the offseason, so let us spend, and spend in free agency. We actually might be able to get some of those pieces we desperately need in free agency. I know George Pickens from the Dallas Cowboys is going to be a free agent. If he does not get franchised, if he does not, I say let's grab him.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. You guys have so many needs. And you know, one of the mocks that I looked at did have you trading with the Jets in the number three spot, or trading back to the number three spot with the Jets, and still getting Reuben Bain, that edge rusher at Miami. So, you can't go wrong whoever you pick. I mean, it's like any player who's a top 10 pick who's going to perform at that level is going to be a huge contributor to you next year.
I agree, and I'm going to mention the Los Angeles Rams a little bit since Kyle is not here. Rams got another nice win Sunday against the Seattle Seahawks. Seahawks missed a potential game-winning field goal. The Rams look great. I mean, they are 8-2. I think that is the best record in the NFC, or tied for the best record in the NFC, and they're getting the job done. I'm not saying this team is going to the Super Bowl. I think the Philadelphia Eagles and the Detroit Lions are going to have some say about that, and maybe a few others. But the Rams are definitely right in the thick of contention for it.
Well, I think I would pick the Rams over the Eagles right now. I also want to point out that Sam Darnold reminded everybody why the Vikings let him walk in free agency, going 29 for 44 for 279 yards, 0 TDs, and 4 interceptions. So, once again, the Rams have Sam Darnold's number, and once again, he has shrunk back down to half size in the biggest moments. This could have been a statement win for Seattle had Darnold played up to the potential that he has shown against other opponents. But once again, we have more evidence that that continues to raise that question. In the biggest moments, can Darnold bring a win home for your team?
And so far, he has not proven he can do that. A little bit of trivia, folks. Me and Mark and Kyle and our good buddy Jeremy Nall have a group chat on Facebook where we talk a lot of sports.
Talk a lot of crap, too.
We are going to talk about the Vikings in a bit because...
Speaking of crap.
The Vikings had a very frustrating loss Sunday, which I'm going to let Mark tell you about. But I will say that Mark was very discouraged after that loss until I messaged him, "Hey, Sam Darnold's thrown 4 picks today," and he said, "Now that cheers me up."
Yeah, because one of the things that Vikings fans are thinking about is, what if we had kept Sam Darnold? So let's go down that road. You know, what if we had kept Sam Darnold, and you know, what would that have meant for the team? Well, it would have meant that we probably wouldn't have been able to sign as many free agents. So let's subtract Ryan Kelly from that. You know, do we keep Garrett Bradbury? I don't think so. We certainly didn't know that Blake Brandle was going to move into center, and he has been really successful in that. In fact, I think if Ryan Kelly cannot return next season, I think Brandle's going to be your starter. I also think that they should draft a center in either the second or the third round, the best available center. But let's just pretend that we have Brandle at center. We plug Will Fries in there at right guard. We don't sign the corpses of Jonathan Allen and Javon Hargrave. I mean, they've shown flashes, but definitely not worth the money that we paid. We go ahead and plug in our youngsters, Jalen Redmond, Levi Drake Rodriguez, maybe without those free agents, Kwesi decides to go for another defensive lineman in the second or third round. And that's something else I'm going to get to here in a little bit. But, you know, it's hard to say. You know, it's hard. Would we have gotten better quarterback play from Darnold than we've gotten from J.J. McCarthy? Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that there is a misunderstanding as far as the Vikings plan with a rookie quarterback on that rookie scale deal. If he develops into a successful quarterback, then yes, you get to use that rookie scale contract to help build up the rest of your team. But if he can't win you football games, if he is in fact losing you football games, which he's primarily responsible for, along with the 6 drops that his receiver. Now, the drops were not tough passes that McCarthy threw off target. He hit his receivers right in the hands, put the ball right where it needed to be. TJ Hockenson on a couple of his drops. I think I commented this on our chat. I said it looked like he had stuck his hands in Crisco. I mean, it just slid right off of his hands. Same thing with Jordan Addison. That definitely would have helped. But, you know, good luck has a way of translating into good luck, and so does bad luck. When things start going wrong, they just seem to compound themselves. And I think that McCarthy's mistakes, his inaccuracy, his slowness in making decisions from the pocket, the mistakes that he's making as far as how he is shifting in the pocket, stepping up when he should shuffle from one side to another, how he didn't run in this game against the Bears. There were plenty of lanes. When they did apply pressure to him, there were plenty of lanes where he could have run for 5, 6, 7 yards instead of throwing an incomplete pass. The Minnesota media is rife with speculation about what's wrong with McCarthy. Head coach Kevin O'Connell said, look, he's doing these things successfully in practice. All the things that we need him to do, the layered passes, the timing, the throwing into spots and letting the receivers break to that spot. He's doing all those things in practice. But when it comes to the game pressure, the crowd, the game speed, he's performing like a rookie.
Which is what he is.
Yeah, absolutely. And the question right now, we've seen flashes, but those flashes have been the exception rather than the norm. So the question is, can he reduce his mistakes and build on his strengths? And I will give Vikings fans, Jeremy, a glimmer of hope here. He's been sacked, you know, like Danielson in the first part of the original Karate Kid, you know, where he's basically just getting kicked all over the mat by Cobra Kai. He didn't take any sacks against the Bears. Now, the Bears don't have a great pass rush, but still, I mean, that's progress. You know, he only took one sack against the Ravens. So sacks were a problem, and he seems to be improving in that area. Another area where he improved was just in game management, getting the team out of the huddle, getting the plays called, changing the play at the line of scrimmage. He did that several times. It was very noticeable. You could hear him on the broadcast going, can, you know, canning the one play for the other play. And usually when he did that, that was successful. So that's good. Only one false start penalty. And that was against Christian Darrisaw. We always give him forgiveness when that happens. So there were some good signs in some of the basics. The things that still concern us about McCarthy, just the mechanics, the footwork, the posture, arm angle, velocity, accuracy. You know, and it sounds like I'm saying, look, everything was fine with the airplane except for the four engines that failed, right? So, you know, can we get the engines going? Here's the thing. Vikings aren't going to make the playoffs. I mean, they're not mathematically eliminated yet, but unless something radical happens, I mean, you know, if McCarthy comes out on Sunday on the road against the Packers and looks like the second coming of Fran Tarkenton, we've got something to discuss. I don't think that's going to happen, though. I mean, the Vikings have a chance to win this game because the Packers have shown an amazing ability to play down to the level of their opponents. So I give the Vikings a puncher's chance this year. I'm definitely not going to pick them, but it's not inconceivable that they could go into Green Bay and win that game, especially as poorly as Green Bay has played the last several weeks. But I don't think that we can say anything definitively about McCarthy at this point.
It's way too early. I mean, you know, he needs time to develop, and he may need more than one season. It took Troy Aikman till his third year in the league for him to start putting up decent numbers. His numbers the first 2 years in the league with Dallas were absolutely horrible. I mean, and not just his rookie year when the Cowboys were one of the worst football teams in the history of the league, but even during his second year when he got them to a 7-7 record and had them on the cusp of the playoffs before going down with an injury. I mean, I think McCarthy needs a little more time to develop. I think you guys need to be patient with him. I know that's hard because you want to win. But one of the things that I think is really one of the biggest negatives of the NFL in recent years is too many teams are way too impatient when it comes to developing quarterbacks. That's why you see so many quarterbacks that have bounced around, like the aforementioned Sam Darnold, Geno Smith, you know, struggled in New York before finding life in Seattle, although he is now struggling again in Las Vegas. Of course, that's because
he's too old and they have a garbage roster.
Yeah,
Pete Carroll is so completely mismanaged that team. They should have just been having Geno hand the ball off to Ashton Jeanty 30 times a game. And the fact that they have him throwing the ball so much is absurd.
Yeah, and it's what I'm saying, but that's my two cents. I'm going to hop in, and I'm going to do our lightning round picks for the upcoming week.
Before you do that, I've got one more relatively quick thing to say about the Vikings. You're talking about the patience of having them develop, and so a lot of the conversation is, if you were the Wilfs, if you were the Wilf brothers, the Wilf family, the owners of the Vikings, what would you do? And a lot of people are saying, well, fire Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, the general manager. He can't draft. Here's the thing. Kwesi's not a football guy. He's an analytics guy, okay? So I don't think the draft problem is Kwesi. I don't even think it's Kevin O'Connell or Brian Flores. I think they can identify talent. I think it's whoever his draft staff is, whoever is doing, because other teams draft well, you know, but the Vikings don't. You know, I'm still angry about how they wasted their third round pick for Ty Felton, who only plays on special teams. He's ostensibly a wide receiver, but he hasn't even gotten a sniff into even the playing lineup. And it's like, that's a third round pick. You're saying you drafted a wide receiver who can't play wide receiver with your number three pick. And guess who they could have had? Cam Scataboo. He was there when the Vikings traded out of that pick to trade a few more picks down and then take Ty Felton for no reason whatsoever. And of all of the picks that the Vikings have botched, I think that one makes me angrier than anything, because I coveted Cam Scataboo on our team. But anyway, this is what I would do with the Wolves. I would bring in Kwesi and say, look, we're hiring a new draft staff for you. We're going to hire a new assistant general manager. Fire Ryan Grigson. Fire him immediately. Get him out of there. And then I don't know what you know, you probably can't do a whole lot with your scouting staff, but I would do an intensive search for an assistant general manager, someone from an organization with a historical track record of success. Philadelphia. I mean, I don't know who is Howie Roseman. Who is Howie Roseman's right-hand man? I know you don't know that offhand. But who is his right-hand man? Who is high up on that draft staff for Howie Roseman in Philadelphia? Or Brett Veach out of Kansas City? Lynch in San Francisco? Yep. Or whoever drafts for Denver. I mean, find an organization with a track record of success in the draft, poach a guy from their draft staff, and tell Kwesi, it's like, this is the guy that you listen to, okay? This is the guy who has the final say, the yes or the no. And if Kwesi doesn't like that, say, well, I'm sorry, we have to part company, and then hire the assistant to be the GM. You know, but if the Vikings don't get better at drafting and this coming season, there is no hope for this franchise.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens. But switching up, my tongue entangled. It's been a crazy week, and I'm dealing with a bad back on top of everything else.
So all right, well, let's get through these. Thursday night, Buffalo at Houston.
I'm taking the Bills, and I think you are too.
Yep, the Bills are going to go in and win this game. We go to the Sunday noon games. Pittsburgh travels to Chicago. I'm taking the Bears.
I'm taking the first place Bears too.
First place Bears. Oh my God, it's ashes in my mouth. New England travels to the woeful Cincinnati Bungles. We can call them the Bungles again. That's a Patriots win.
I agree.
The Giants going to Detroit. This is a bounce back win for Detroit at home.
I agree.
They destroy the Giants. Minnesota travels to Green Bay. I'm not foolish enough to pick the Vikings.
I'm taking the Packers at Lambeau.
Oh, my God. I am so sorry. Seattle at Tennessee.
Well, we know the Seahawks are going to have a bounce-back game.
You know, I got to see Sam Darnold last season playing for the Vikings play at Tennessee, and he had a really good game. I think he's going to have a really great game against your secondary.
He probably is. Colts and Chiefs, I'm going to... You know, before the season, nobody would have thought me making this pick would have been an upset, but I am going to pick the upset and pick the Chiefs to bounce back.
Yeah, the Chiefs are playing for their season. They're playing at home. It's gonna be a close game, I think, but I don't see Indy coming in. Because if Indianapolis wins, that in effect ends the Chiefs' season. I mean, it dramatically lowers their possibility of getting into the playoffs. The Jets go to Baltimore. Baltimore is going to continue their resurgence and crush the Jets at home.
Us Titans fans back in the old days used to call them the Ratbirds, and the Ratbirds are winning games.
Yes. In this week's Toilet Bowl, Cleveland travels to Las Vegas.
I'm taking the Raiders at home because the Browns have a great defense, but they have a weak offense. And we have not heard yet if Shedeur Sanders is going to start again. I know that Dylan Gabriel was looking at concussion protocol. It is worth mentioning about Shedeur, who I will say looked absolutely horrible in his first NFL action on Sunday. It was later revealed that Shedeur had not taken any first-team snaps, so he literally just got thrown into the fire.
Yeah, that's no excuse. If you're the number two quarterback, you have to be ready to play. You have to be ready to play. I mean, at the very least, to hand off the ball and throw a screen pass, which was beyond his capabilities.
I will give him one more chance in Vegas.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be any good.
We'll
because
see.
Vegas is going to eke that. That's going to be a really ugly game. Jacksonville travels to the Valley of the Sun, and I'm going to take the Jags to beat the Cardinals.
I think that's going to happen as well.
Okay. This is turning out to be kind of a fun game. You've got Philadelphia that won a rock fight at home against Detroit last Sunday night. Now they travel to Dallas, whose record is still putrid at 4-5. And what is that updated for last night's win?
Yes.
Okay, 4-5-1. But Dallas has a really, really good offense. Their defense is playing better. Philadelphia has, you know what? I'm picking the Cowboys.
I'm taking the Eagles.
We'll see about that. Atlanta going to New Orleans. You know what? Penix is out for the season, so Kirk O'Chains is starting for the Falcons, so I'm going with the Saints.
I'm going to take the Falcons, but you may be right.
Tampa Bay travels to L.A. to take on the Rams
in the possibly SoFi. Game of the week.
Oh, my goodness. I'm not betting against the Rams at home. I'll take L.A.
I'm taking L.A. as well. And you know what? The Monday night game before the season, nobody would have thought this would have been a great game. This one's got a chance to be a good game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Panthers and Niners. I'm going to take the Niners at home.
Yeah.
But you never know.
No, absolutely taking the Niners at home. But, yeah, Carolina has really showed us something this year. They've got a winning record. Let's see if they are in the playoff. I'm going to standings.
Playoff. There you go.
Playoff. Let's take a look at where Carolina is out of the playoff picture right now. They're currently the ninth seed
in the NFC. They're a game out in the wild card, but they're only half a game back in the NFC South. Wow.
Yeah. And, continuing to look at the NFC, the Niners are currently holding that final playoff card spot to the seventh seed. So that game between San Francisco and Carolina has direct playoff implications. If Carolina pulls off the win, both of those teams will stand at 7-5, but Carolina will take over that last spot through the virtue of the head-to-head victory.
That is right.
And Detroit, surprisingly, is currently out of the playoff picture. They are in the eighth seed at 6-4, and so they really have to that's kind of a must-win for them at home. And the Vikings could further muddy up the playoff picture because Green Bay sits at 6. Of course, they've got that problematic tie earlier in the season with Dallas, but if Green Bay falls to 6-4, Minnesota improves to 5-6. Those are all very big ifs, of course. This is the fun time of the year when you get you're approaching Thanksgiving and getting into December. This is when most of the games, except for the bottom feeders, have playoff implications, and even the bottom feeder teams, their games have draft pick implications. So this is really, other than the playoffs, this is the best time of the season.
It is, and it's going to be fun to watch, and we're going to talk more about that next week. We got a fun show coming up next week. I think we're going to have a pretty cool special guest, but on that note, we're going to wrap it up. I'm Mike Bueller.
I'm Mark Sanders.
And on behalf of Kyle Roberts, you have been listening to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.